This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Dave Wyman and Mike Lefko today. And right now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, as promised, we have Rams play-by-play broadcaster J.B. Long. J.B., how are you, man?
Hi, Dave. Hi, Mike. Thank you for the invitation. Hope your week is off to a good start.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And you're a big part of that, J.B. Tell us how your off-season's going.
If I'm a big part of it, you guys must be struggling on this Monday. I am thrilled to be with you. Sorry I couldn't make it work last week. I finally drew the jury duty card, which fell at an opportune time following the long holiday and also the football offseason, so everything worked out just fine. Glad to play my part and to be hopefully free and clear for football season.
Now, did you really serve on jury duty?
I did not get to serve, or was not chosen to serve, which is both disappointing and relieving, as you can imagine.
I would say, Dave, we had a back and forth. I was trying to lock up a time with JB, and we're like, oh, you're on jury duty? Maybe, maybe not. Then you had it, then you didn't have it. So I imagine that was quite a week.
Well, I was told that if you act like a kind of a crazy person during the interview, that they might leave you out of it. So is that, did you do that, JB?
Yeah, you go through all sorts of different strategies, but I'm driving the person crazy at home, my wife most notably, by not being able to tell her until 7 p.m. the night before whether or not I'm going to contribute anything on the home front the following day. So.
Okay. Oh, we're glad to have you, JB. But, so we talked about this last year that, you know, going into a game against another team and you go, okay, who are the guys that I would love for them to not be available? I don't want to say be injured, but just not be available. And it was Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, and Matthew Stafford. And that was the case for you most of the year. What's the status on those three players?
Yeah, our general manager, Les Snead, this offseason called those three load-bearing walls. And if you're using kind of the renovation model for what the Rams are year to year, 22 to 23, I think that's an apt comparison. The pieces that you can't knock down, you wouldn't want to knock down. But very much around them, you've done some demolition. And how it's going to be rebuilt, whether it can be rebuilt this quickly and effectively, is certainly the question of the fall for the Los Angeles Rams. But I think you're right to point out that inside that 5-12 season, so many things went wrong. And among them were those three players missing significant time, like you mentioned. And we could spend the rest of this conversation, the rest of the segment, detailing the others, which I'm sure would be of no interest to your audience. The fact of the matter is the Rams need to be a lot better in just about every area of their football team. And in addition to that, they have to have the good fortune that the teams that are often standing at the end of the calendar year and into January typically have.
Yeah, so JB, not to say that we don't care about all those names, but out of those marquee names, out of the ones that would have some resonance to Seahawks fans, how does Matthew Stafford look out there now? I mean, he had a physically tough year last year, and now feels like maybe he's coming through that. For you, what does he look like so far in this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to check the tape on me this time last year, I was probably making excuses for why him not throwing during the OTAs was not a big deal, how he's made a career out of playing through injury, he's already had a full season in the Rams system, and on and on and on. And I meant those genuinely last year, but I think the results indicated that maybe they were not as accurate as anyone would have liked. Matthew Stafford did not play the full season. Even when he did play, maybe there were some ill effects of a truncated offseason in which he didn't get to fully develop a rapport with a newcomer like Allen Robinson. And he leaned heavily on Cooper Kupp, maybe to a fault. All that to say, in greater conscience and confidence, I can say right now, the pop has returned for 9. And what I mean by that is when you stand on the sideline at practice this spring like I had, there's some sizzle to his throws, and he's not taking a rep off. And so if you'll allow me to kind of speak out both sides of my mouth year over year, I do think that matters to Matthew, to Sean McVay, and to the outcomes that the Rams will get from him coming up in 23.
Hey, JB, so not a lot of fanfare around the draft for you guys. Seahawks, because of the Russell Wilson deal, had the number 5 pick and the number 20 pick, and yours were mostly from what I think one pick, I think pick 161 on is most of them. But who are any of those guys? Have you gotten to know any of those guys? Who are they? Who are they hopeful about of this young rookie class?
Yeah, so you're right. I think there was some interest in the Rams maybe even jumping up into the first day of the draft if they could have made a deal work for a couple of offensive pieces that were intriguing. But you notice that no one traded out of the first into day two this year, so it takes two to tango. And instead, they took Steve Avila, an interior offensive lineman from TCU, with their first selection at the top of day two. And I interpreted that, and Les Snead, the general manager, has said, as much as a vote of confidence in Matthew Stafford. So just kind of to tie the two points together, when you're taking a guard with center potential with your first overall selection of a draft 2 years in a row, really, because the Rams did the same last spring, that says to me that all these concerns about Matthew Stafford being traded and or retiring and or being past his peak years, the Rams don't think that. Otherwise, I'm sure they could have and would have gone in a different direction. So I think the sooner Avila is a starter, and I think day one is the projection, the better the Rams can be up front for Matthew Stafford, combined with Logan Bruss, hopefully at the other guard spot, last year's top pick. Behind that, they threw a lot of darts at the board. I said at some point they threw more darts than Ted Lasso across 2 days, really, Friday and Saturday of this NFL draft. And then they signed more than 20 college free agents on the back of that. So what you have is now a near 90-man roster this summer that has turned over by more than 50%. So I'm still learning the names and the faces. I think the coaching staff, they've turned as well. So there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of jobs to be won. There's this unique dichotomy between system continuity, because McVay stayed and he calls the offensive plays, and he hired an offensive coordinator, Mike LaFleur, who comes off that Shanahan tree and speaks his language. And then Raheem Morris not getting that Indianapolis Colts job was a big deal. I'm disappointed for him, but I'm thrilled for the Rams, because I thought he did some really good things, oftentimes with one hand tied behind his back on defense last year. And he's a great teacher. He's an amazing coach for young college players looking to carve out their space in the National Football League. And so outside of Aaron Donald, there's not a lot of names on defense that opposing fans would know, or maybe even Rams fans would know. But they're hoping to find some starters here this summer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, JB. I mean, the departures on defense are just staggering from these guys that Seahawks fans know have kind of terrorized the Seahawks offense over the past few seasons. So Greg Gaines gone, Leonard Floyd gone, Bobby Wagner back here, Jalen Ramsey all gone. Is this the great unknown? Is this defense kind of the great mystery for you guys this offseason?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And Ramsey probably bears mention sooner in this conversation, especially given the way that he played against the Seahawks for all those years in Horns, right? Like, he was uniquely equipped to battle the passing attacks of the NFC West, to go up against the DeAndre Hopkins and the DK Metcalf of the world. And that performance that he put on the field up there at Lumen in week 17 or 18 last year was one for the ages. Like, literally nothing to play for. All the other marquee players on his team on the shelf. And Ramsey, I thought, had one of his best games as a Ram, both in terms of coverage and taking the football away, but also just as he always was as a Ram, of physical presence on the edge, tackling in space. So his loss, you can't compensate for that. Like, there are only a small handful of Jalen Ramseys in the world, and the Rams don't get to put out there anymore. So they're in a wide search for a combination of coverage replacements, none of which will equal number 5 in Royal and Saul these past few years.
So, JB, as Mike mentioned, we took Bobby Wagner back here, and you know, he really had a good year. What was the situation? Because it was the same way here in Seattle. The reps, I mean, he was, you know, 97-98% of the reps. He seemed like a guy that you know, it's, I think he prides himself on being out there for every snap, and that seemed to be the case there. Just kind of a quick little, what he meant to that defense. We know what a good guy he is and everything, but he also had a really good season.
He had a great season. I think one of his best, like, yeah, going back to his prime years in that Legion of Boom defense, his championship seasons. And on the very short list of things that went right and went well for the Rams in 2022, Bobby Wagner tops that list. And yeah. I think his impact will continue to be felt with the way he mentored now third-year off-ball linebacker Ernest Jones, who figures to replace him maybe to that volume here in 2023. And I hesitate to even bring this up because it undermines what I just said and what we all feel about Bobby Wagner. But unfortunately, last year's experience affirmed, I think, a lot of what modern football analysis tells us about middle linebacker and the way it does or does not impact winning in the National Football League in the current construct. A Hall of Fame linebacker had one of his best seasons and the Rams won 5 games. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah. I hate to point that out, but in terms of where you invest your resources, I think Bobby Wagner was a privilege to have for 1 year, but I can see why more and more his ilk might be a dying breed. And you can still use a great player at that position. Don't get me wrong. It's better having one than not having one. But in a limited cap environment with only so many draft picks, you can see why teams are trending towards quarterback, receiver, tackle, edge rusher, corner. Right? Those are, when someone has a career year at those positions, your win total usually goes with it.
Brings a tear to my eye, JB, being a former middle linebacker, part of a dying breed.
You and me both, and I've never made a tackle in my life.
JB, talking about some of that receiver depth there, the Rams the past few years have had these, you know, big name wide receivers kind of pop in and then depart, Odell Beckham and then Allen Robinson, as you said. But what does the wide receiver depth look like behind Cooper Kupp, or is this a team that will kind of use him and then rely on the tight ends heavily?
I do think the Rams, who have lived in 11 personnel under Sean McVay, have a chance to use two tight end sets more than ever before. Like, they actually have 4 drafted tight ends in that room now, which feels different. It's not just Tyler Higbee and everybody else. But it is still Cooper Kupp, and we'll see. And I think there are some names that they're mentioning, like Van Jefferson, like Ben Skowronek, like Tutu Atwell, you know, who I think is poised for a breakout year 3 and is certainly the fastest Ram on the roster. But in terms of proven NFL experience, is there a Robert Woods or a Sammy Watkins or an Odell Beckham Jr., even an Allen Robinson? It did not work out last year, but, you know, his track record, I think, gave good reason to be optimistic. There isn't. There really isn't. And so there's a long way to go at that position. They drafted Puka Nacua, who actually started with Jimmy Lake at Washington before finishing at BYU. Jimmy Lake now on staff with McVay and the Rams, for what it's worth. But I think it'll be some time now, training camp at the earliest, before I could tell you what, like, the top 4 or 5 in terms of targets will look like for the Rams this season.
Hey, JB, you mentioned your tight end, Tyler Higbee. Who's a guy on that team that is just a solid, where you're just like, that is a good dude? You know, like the Seahawks, that Will Disley is probably one of those guys, certainly Bobby Wagner, but who, you know, it seems like Tyler Higbee has been there for forever, but who is that guy on that team?
Yeah, Tyler's been a great piece. I mean, he is now the most prolific receiving tight end in Rams history, which it kind of happened while we were sleeping, but he will go down as that, no question, and it might be some time before someone supplants him. I'm a father of 2 boys, not daughters, but if I had daughters and I were recommending a player to them for consideration, a few names come to mind. Jordan Fuller, a 4th-year safety, is as kind and genuine and entertaining an individual as I've been around during my time with the Rams. I really enjoy being around him. That would probably be my leading example. Trying to think what others come to mind. Kobe Turner is a rookie draft pick who I've only met once, but among his claims to fame, he had a music scholarship on the table from Richmond because he's such a talented singer. He's engaged and is trying to make his way, you know, replacing Greg Gaines along that defensive interior with Aaron Donald. So those would be a couple.
Hey, JB, before we let you go here, just trying to figure out more about this offense. Very strange year, it seemed like, for Cam Akers, where we know he left the team, and then I know there was some stuff that came out about maybe trying to trade him, and then he turns out to be a great running back towards the end of the year. He had a great game against the Seahawks at the end of the year. Is he now the established number one running back, and is everything kind of all resolved with whatever happened last year?
The first part of that question is easier than the second half. I'll say yes, he is clearly RB1 in terms of his everything settled behind the scenes, you know, only he and Sean McVay could probably answer that question with full clarity. But when you look at his six-game sample size to close out last year, if you were to project that over a 17-game slate, I know that's fool's gold. That was all pro-caliber stuff, and he was doing it behind an offensive line that really didn't have any business starting together in the National Football League and was cobbled together deep in December. So I think there's reason to be bullish on Cam Akers. I'm not giving up fantasy football advice, but I think he's a clear number one. With Kyren Williams back for a second season out of Notre Dame, probably in that third down back role, and then they drafted one Evans out of Ole Miss and TCU and have a couple other college free agents. But, yeah, I think Cam Akers knows that this is a now or never opportunity for him. And I think everyone involved in what fractured there probably comes away with a lesson learned that puts him in a better place for 2023.
Well, JB, we really appreciate your time. I look forward to seeing you that the first game of the season up here, right? September 10th?
I believe that the Rams have ever been up there under my tenure. So I'm looking forward to that, although I love coming to Seattle no matter the weekend. But that should be cool on a fall, what is it, September?
10th.
Early September, week one.
Yep.
All right. In the back of Tulsa, UW, right?
I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah. There you go.
That's the game of Husky Stadium the day before.
All right.
Okay. Nice double dip you can get there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Always have my eye on the Pac-12 football.
Right. Yeah. There you go. All right. Well, we really appreciate it, JB, and thanks for taking the time.
Sorry for the postponement, but glad we got it in. Have a good rest of your show.
All right. Thanks
JB.
Appreciate that. There he goes, JB Long. He get to know these guys in the division, certainly. And if you missed any of that conversation, by the way, with JB Long or anything from our show, you can go to our podcast page at seattlesports.com, click on our picture and hit subscribe to make sure you never miss a thing. And then just make sure to check out everything that we have there on that page, including breakdowns, articles, seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman. You can kind of hear like there's lots of questions there, you know, as far as, you know, and that's the thing right now. I mean, you look at half the division. I mean, there was a time, I think it was a couple, 3 years ago where it was like, you know, everybody was in. I mean, the Rams, the Niners were good. Arizona was good. The Seahawks were good. And now it just looks like very much a rebuilding year with the Rams. And then I don't know what's going on in Arizona. I think it's very, you know, maybe I know you guys already got who'd you have from Arizona? Was it
Paul Calvisi?
Calvisi, yeah, who's great. But you know, maybe we can get Wolfley on later just to see. That's one of the, you know, if you look around the NFL, Siraj today and Bump, he was Siraj filling in for Stacy today. They were talking about who's going to be on the cover of the Madden video game this year. I feel like Aaron Rodgers is a slam dunk that it's going to be him in his new Jet uniform. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be Kyler Murray anytime soon. I tell you that much. But yeah, we're just kind of talking about, they were talking about all the different things going on with each team. And I feel like the theme for Arizona and the Cardinals is that they're in just a state of disarray right now. You know, it's just there's just not a lot of stability going on there. The coaching change, and then you know there was the story in the off season about the burner phone and some of the things that you know possibly getting in trouble with the NFL with their general manager. I mean, it's been chaotic down there.
I think we know Arizona's going to be a disaster. It seems like it. I am curious about the Rams because it does feel like they are in a bit of a turnover rebuilding. But how can you be in a complete rebuilding mode when you have those three? When you have Stafford, Cooper Kupp, and Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Like those three stars, it feels like you can't really bottom out like the Cardinals will. So I don't know what to expect out of the Rams. They have to be better than last year because everyone was hurt. All those three were hurt. It kind of feels like they're going to hover around 500 and maybe be a dark horse playoff threat because of those three.
Yeah.
You get Cooper Kupp back. He's always a danger on offense. If Matthew Stafford is healthy and fully slinging the ball, that's a pretty good offense with just him and Cooper Kupp. And yeah, Tyler Higbee and Aaron Donald, we know he can single-handedly wreck a game. So I think the Rams are the most curious case in the division and maybe the NFC because if they're better than we expect and the expectation is that they're not going to be good, that could pose a bit of a problem. I mean, especially week one, you come out there and maybe that's the best time to get them. Cooper Kupp might not be fully healthy yet. Matthew Stafford, who knows how he's coming off of the offseason where he had the spinal thing and the elbow that we heard about before last year. So getting the Rams early might be the best case scenario before they finally click and get back in a rhythm. But I wouldn't be surprised, Dave, if this is kind of like a Lions-like team last year, where all of a sudden by the end of the year, the Rams have turned it on and they're hovering around 8-8 at the end of the season, and maybe they sneak up to 9-8.
Yeah, well, and remember last year at Los Angeles at the Rams, and I think the Seahawks were favorites in that game. They had to have a game-winning drive to win that one. It was Geno Smith to DK Metcalf. And then, you know, they had to win in overtime to get in the playoffs and here at home in the last game.
That's where we kind of saw Cam Akers. Like, wait, this guy wasn't even on the team a month ago, and now here he is running and solidifying his starting job.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at as iconic as Pete Carroll is, I feel like Sean McVay is that for that team. And like you said, I like the way he put that, by the way, those are load-bearing walls, right? You can't tear those down or the building will fall down. If you lose those three guys, then it's a do-over. But, you know, they can kind of fill in around. And that's the thing. Sean McVay, very smart guy, has a very clear idea. I remember when I saw that he was done with Jared Goff, and I think was it a playoff game in Green Bay, and he wouldn't even talk to Jared Goff, and he was like, I'm done. I'm moving on. He's very clear about where he wants to go. And for him to be able to take Jared Goff at the time, now I'm not talking about the Detroit Lions Jared Goff, but at the time that he was able to take that team, and I'm saying he, McVay, take that team to a Super Bowl and lose to the Patriots, was amazing, because Jared Goff was not a good football player at that point. So, I mean, you could say, well, he took his team. I don't think
he took. You're going to get a text from Jared Goff. You know.
Yeah. They're going to say,
our loyal listener, Jared Goff's
you,
about
Dave.
To text in.
Bleep you, signed Jared Goff. But, yeah, it's. I think he's a really good coach. That's the thing. He scares me. You know, same thing I would say with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. Those guys scare me. They, you know, they unfortunately build amazing rosters, and I feel like that McVay just finds a way to win. So you know, the fact that they still have those three guys coming back, and they're going to try to, you know, sort of rebuild the rest of the house, sticking with the comparison there. I feel like he can get that done.
Yeah.
So anyway, I know you're looking at me like that, Mike, because we need to go to break. Am I right?
You want me to throw it to break for us?
Yeah. Just pulling up my, I'm trying to remember. Oh, I know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
The Mariners, did they hit rock bottom this weekend? Oh my gosh, how fatalistic is that? Well, we'll talk about it next. This is SeattleSports.com and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Got Mike Lefko in today. Got Brady Robick on the board. And what have we got here? Is this the low point of the Mariners season? It's not that negative because, I mean, I read it at first thinking, geez, I mean, you know, at this point last year, they were 25-30.
Well, you hope it's the low point. Like, you don't want it to get any worse.
Right. But, yeah, the way you wrote it, it wasn't that. It was the way I read it because I'm like, oh, it's so terrible. This is like, you know, it's not that bad. And I think that's your point. And if it is the low point, I mean, that's great. You just got whooped by a really good team, unfortunately. The Rangers, which they were supposed to be good last year, and it just didn't happen. Like, Semien did not have the year that he was supposed to have, and now he's killing it. But yeah, I mean, you hope that that's the case. But, you know, there's lots of, you know, I just think that for fans, baseball is hard to be a fan. If you're a really big time, like Bob, like he hangs on every game. I mean, he really is just like, it could be a good day or bad day, you know, and I think that's where a lot of really good Mariner fans live, right? So if you are and you were thinking, hey, we're going to take the next step, I would say there's still time. There's still time. But, yeah, you hope that this is the low point.
Yeah, because of the situation, because of how you were outscored over the weekend, and because the Mariners haven't beaten good teams yet. So you can't fall any further behind. This is not comparable to last year in the sense where the record got much worse last year, but there weren't as many good teams that you were fighting with for a playoff spot. Now everyone's better. Now you're chasing teams like the Orioles and the Rangers that weren't that good last year, in addition to the Red Sox, who didn't make the playoffs last year, the Angels, who didn't make the playoffs last year. All those teams are in front of you. The Blue Jays are still there. And what you had last year were these series wins over good teams. The Mariners swept the Blue Jays at home. They kind of owned the Rangers last year. They won three first-half series against the Astros. They beat the Yankees both times. And this year, you look up and down the schedule, and do you know how many... I'll throw a little trivia question out to you, Dave, and the listeners, too, if the listeners want to weigh in. But they kind of ruin it because they Google it every... You know, they don't... It's not off the cuff, but I'll throw it out there anyway. On the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. How many series have the Mariners won against teams with a 500 or better record?
How many total series? I'm going to say three.
Two.
Two.
The Astros at the start of May, and now the Pirates, who are, again, above 500. Yeah. They've hovered around there. So that's it. They have not beaten another team. I guess I ruined the trivia question. Sorry,
listeners.
So
you're becoming me.
Yeah. I threw it out there, and then I literally spoiled it before anyone could text in, and now people are texting in. Congrats on some of those. Sorry I ruined that. But, yeah, kind of the point of the statement there is that they're not beating these good teams.
Yeah.
So when you have a stretch coming up where you're going to play the Angels again, who beat you earlier in the season, you're going to play the Yankees again coming up soon, who really kind of dominated you in those two wins. You got to find ways to beat these teams. And the Rangers series was going to be such a pivotal weekend because of what John Morosi told you guys on Thursday. It had the chance to be a springboard. You go into Texas and beat one of the hottest teams in baseball. That builds into the month of June. Conversely, you know, you can lose a series, but you lose a series like this where you're so thoroughly outplayed and look overmatched on offense, and all of a sudden in the standings, you give up ground, and then you deal with all these questions about, well, this team is not finding ways to beat these good teams. So for the simple fact of you get down towards the end of the season, you might not have the tiebreakers. Well, also you get down towards the end of the season, you're playing these good teams again, because the Mariners don't play the Rangers again until the very end of the year, but they play seven times. They play them seven times at the end of the season. So seven of their final 10 are against the Rangers. Oh, those other three are against the Astros, who also look good right now. 509 says, pretty sure Lefko had to Google it too. I did, but yesterday. So today I didn't have to Google it, but yesterday I did.
So you're Mike, right. Now you see how easy it is to spoil something when you're on this side of the glass.
I know. Right. I got too excited.
You always give me a hard time about spoiling, wanting to move ahead. No,
I get it now. You just want to get right to the meat of what we're talking about and jump through the list of the top five to get to number one. But well, yeah, that's the one concerning difference for me, and in hoping that this is rock bottom, is that you build up from here.
Yeah,
and you go on a run.
The question I would ask, though, well, I mean, because here's you ride the edge as far as your emotions and, you know, and really where it comes from is love. You love your team. You love your team and you want them to, you know, play better than they are, whatever. If they are able to take two from the Padres and take two out of three from the Angels, are you going to feel all better again? Or are you going to still go, yeah, looming in the distance is that seven game you talked about series, or not series, but the seven games they have left with Texas, the games with New York, you know, playing against, like you said, what, two? Who are the two teams? Pittsburgh?
No, Astros and Pirates.
And yeah, Astros. So.
And the Pirates, okay, that's a team over 500, but it doesn't really mean much in the course of a playoff race.
Yeah.
When you're going to have to play so many good teams in the American League. I mean, all but five teams in the American League. Well, now, the Mariners are below 500. So all but six teams in the American League are above 500. And you have to play all these teams because of the balanced schedule. So you're playing every single team in baseball this year. So the Mariners are going to see every team in the American League twice, you know, two series against them. And if you aren't beating these teams, that's slightly concerning. But back to kind of what you're getting at. Yeah, Dave, I think, you know, we'll learn a lot about this team if they string together a run, because we're waiting for it. We expect it. We want to see it. What's just going to be the catalyst, the impetus for that run? And I was kind of relating this, and you'll also hear it later on the best Mariners weeknight off day segment in baseball, 7:15 on Extra Innings.
Part of.
Yeah. Curtis Rogers and I discussed this later tonight, that this Rangers series feels like the Padres weekend in 2021 when they were outscored 31-7. But they rallied from that. The Mariners won seven of their next eight. So if that is rock bottom, because 2021, that was rock bottom. When you looked back at the season, that represented a turning point.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of feels similar. They were outscored 30-9. Now is that similar run there?
Right. Well, and if this is the low point at 29-30, because
right.
like I said, last year at this time, I think they were 25-30. So, yeah, it's interesting. You look at some of the series coming up. I mean, it looks tough, but you know, Miami's a pretty decent team. That's a home stand of three there. But you got the White Sox coming in. You're going to New York. You know, remember? Did they beat? I think they beat the Yankees.
Both
twice
times.
On the road, right?
Yeah, they won both series against them
right.
last year. So yeah,
because I remember the guy from New York. Remember we had that clip of the guy going, "The Mariners."
He became one of the biggest Mariners fans the rest of the season because of that.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, I hope this is. I hope this is it. But I think, you know, it's so difficult living on the edge. But I think also, you know, you're talking about the youth, and that, like, okay, was it fool's gold when Bryce Miller went out and, you know, did what he did early on, and then now all of a sudden, what did we have? Our stat was he's the last seven innings, he's given up like seven plus. No, it wasn't last seven innings, it was his last two outings, he's given up seven plus runs.
The start you wanted to hear about he made history, the very specific stat of he was the first pitcher to only give up five total runs in his first whatever starts, and then give up at least five in his next two.
The oddly specific one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think that's, and you get, like I said earlier, though, to Ryan, and I think Ryan sort of agreed that Scott Service is, I feel like, the best steward of the younger player, just because he doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And that's, how many times does he say, oh, that's just baseball? You know, and it's funny, I remember I was a defensive coordinator, like the first year I did it, it was high school football. And I think because I played 9 years in the NFL, that everybody thought, you know, who hired me was like, well, yeah, you can be the defensive coordinator. I was like, yeah, it was really tough. I mean, you got to coordinate an entire defense. But anyway, I had a neighbor that went to the game, and we played Eastlake, who was really good at that time, and they just killed us. They beat us like 42-0. And his comment to me was, you know, you look so calm on the sidelines. If I was you, I would have been, you know, pissed off and, you know, this and that. I'm like, you think we're getting beat 42-0, and you think I should like be screaming and yelling and throwing things? I mean, you've got to be the guy that's the steady. You got to steady the ship. And the only time you ever see Service get really emotional is when he goes out and tries to protect one of his players from getting thrown out of the game. You know, he tries to get in between Tom Murphy and what's his name, C.B. Buckner. You know, I mean, that's the only time that he really does, you know, does show any kind of emotion. So, yeah, I'm bullish on this team. All right, coming up next, we may have a timeline on the NBA's expansion plan, and we'll hear about it when we sweep the dial. That's next. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver sat down with the NBA on TNT crew last night, and Shaq asked the commish, with all of us, what all of us have been wondering about the NBA expansion.
Adam, last question. They want us to go, but I need to this question answered. With everything going so well, do you see in the near future more expansion teams? Like you hear Seattle, you hear Las Vegas. Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility. And I think what we've said in the last few years, number one, we wanted to get our collective bargaining agreement done. So we've done that now. And the other thing, we wanted to understand what our new media rights packages are. And, you know, as Matt said, those negotiations will begin, you know, in earnest probably in this next spring. Once that's done, we'll turn to expansion. We don't have anything specific in mind right now, but I think it makes sense over time. You know, if you're a successful organization to continue to grow, there's no doubt there's a lot of great cities who are interested in having the NBA.
We don't have anything specific in mind.
Yeah, but he gave a kind of a timeline. Next spring, once they iron out that media rights deal, and that's what we've heard from.
Well, I don't want to hear that from him. Well, I don't want to hear him say we don't have anything in specific, because what he's talking about is where. To me, that's the number one question.
But he mentioned it's a possibility. After Shaq said Seattle. I like that.
Yeah, I do like that Shaq said that.
Don't you think Adam Silver probably does have in mind Seattle. Some cities, yeah. I think they, in the back of their mind, absolutely have the two cities in mind. It is Seattle and Vegas, but he's not going to say that now because there is a big and all-important rights deal coming up. I believe they're... One of them expires in 2025, one is 2026 with TNT and then ESPN. So those, you know, billion-dollar contracts are going to get hammered out. And then the owners will say, all right, how much money can we take in from these two new expansion teams? So, yeah, then they'll sit there and really kind of dive through the nuances of it. But
I can't think of any other city other than Seattle. I mean, Vegas is the very obvious one for everything now. I mean, the Raiders moved there. And, you know, the A's supposedly were going to do a deal. I think that one felt...
No, they're there.
Are they still going
it was
through
just,
with
it? It was just where now they have a new site. So they will be moving. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get that one, but I just don't see any other. Where else would you go?
Yeah.
I mean, what other city? There's no city anywhere in the U.S. other than Seattle that's... There's not one that's clamoring for an NBA franchise.
Well, they'll come in twos. That's the good news.
Right.
So it's not either or. So I think that's great if you're hearing these two consistently mentioned together, because you get two on the this coast. You get two in the Pacific time zone, and then that's almost like the pairing of... I know travel is not as big of an issue in the NBA, but it's still okay. You balance out a little bit more. Two new franchises on this side of the country. Two markets that could support basketball. I think it's only good news to keep hearing Vegas and Seattle together as the two cities.
Sweeping the dial.
After making his MLB debut on Saturday, Brian Wu discussed his first career MLB start.
I don't really honestly feel too sped up. Obviously, the slider wasn't really there early. Kind of got a feel for it towards the end of the second inning and was able to land a couple of them for strikes. But... You can't really establish a breaking ball early. It makes you pretty predictable. So, like you said, nice to get a couple of those strikeouts there. Definitely would have liked to expand late in the zone. Just left too many pitches middle and paid for it. So it is what it is. It's baseball, so it is. So try to build off of it, learn from it, and get back to work tomorrow.
Ryan,
so.
This kid sound grounded to you? I mean, he sounds like a 10-year vet. I love it. He's, you know, that's got to be frustrating. Just, you know, like, who was it? Was it Bryce Miller that he was talking about that he left one right in the middle of the plate for Aaron Judge and he popped it up?
Yeah.
You know, it's like sometimes you just get, it's just bad luck. But yeah, I like everything I heard from him, and he sounds like just a very steady dude.
That's
what you need. No emotions.
Right. But I feel bad for him. I mean, that was such a tough situation.
Yeah.
And we all had probably the unfair expectation that he would just come out and cruise, because every other young pitcher we've seen from the Mariners has come up and has been very good in their debuts. Then you throw him into the cauldron of playing in a place the Mariners have not done overly well in, against a lineup that is just firing on all cylinders. And yeah, the Rangers came out, first two pitches, already a run on the board. So tough day for that guy. But you want to talk about persistence and overcoming adversity. You go through a start like that, I feel like everything else is going to be easier after that.
True.
Sweeping the dial.
Seahawks running back Ken Walker talks about the first time he met Bobby Wagner.
He's great, bro. I remember DK used to always tell me, you know, because DK is right next to me. He used to be like, I wish you could meet Bobby. I wish you would have met Bobby. So I talked to him after the game, after I think it was the first game. He came and talked to me. And, I mean, he DM'd me, actually. And I talked to him on there. And then that's when I knew he was, you know, he was a great guy, because after that game, you know, they didn't win that game, but he was still able to reach out to me. And then, you know, just having him in the locker room, being able to talk to him, he's a great guy.
Yes, he is. And I just, it's so funny that I remember his rookie year when he used to go on the road with his Ninja Turtle backpack. And he just was who he was going to be. And I think a lot of people would have said, man, if you're a rookie, why would you bring that on yourself? And there were some guys that I think were kind of getting on Bobby a little bit when he was a rookie. And he got the sort of hazing thing. And to see him now at this point, such a mature, awesome teammate, a guy that everybody looks up to. You know, and he mentioned DK in his last year here, so I guess that was 2021. They were in Green Bay, and DK got thrown out of the game, and Bobby, like, sat next to him on the plane and talked to him the whole way home. So that's the reason why DK is telling Ken Walker, you got to get to know this guy.
Right, and the impact that a defensive guy can have on the offense. I mean, was there a lot of overlap for when you guys played? Is that common that you, the defensive guys, are maybe mentoring offensive guys if they're that much of a veteran?
Yeah, it's just about two guys, you know, like... I'd go to Steve Largent and ask him for advice. I mean, that's a guy you want. I remember he
would you go to Dave Craig?
No. No, Dave came to me for... No. That's a good question, though. I was thinking we need to get Dave Craig back on because...
Oh, about a couple hours.
I'm not sure if I'm prepared. But yeah, I mean, Steve... I remember Steve Largent on the plane one time was reading a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. Mm-hmm. Like... You should have written that book. I mean, Steve was just, he was amazing. So, yeah, no, to answer your question, it wasn't real cliquish. I mean, offense, defense, everybody hung out together. So, yeah, it was, it's cool. And that way, you know, it's good that it's that way. I know it's like that in Major League Baseball, and that's probably why you asked that question, that, like, there's sort of the position players, and then there's kind of the pitchers.
Yeah, it's just, right, because it's tougher to interact when you are in the bullpen. You're really not interacting with... everyday guys, right. And when you're a starting pitcher, you're not really interacting with everyday guys in the lineup. So I don't want to say it's cliquish, but, you know, just naturally there are different units that form. So, right, in the NFL, good to see that it's kind of a mix and a crossover.
Because you're physically divided, you know, the bullpen and everything. Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, coming up next, what did we learn about the Mariners from this past weekend? And what are we looking forward to seeing at Seahawks minicamp? You and I are going out to minicamp tomorrow. That's up next on Wyman and Bob. This is SeattleSports.com and the Seattle Sports app.